This is made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, this year celebrating their 22nd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. And we're also pleased to welcome back to the show Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And for a long time, she's been here with us on the program in the summer, the spring, the fall, when things are growing and the edges of the growing season, to talk about things that grow in the home landscape. Trees and shrubs, grass, flowers, vegetable plants. We've also talked about houseplants. All these years, Sandy's been doing it. We come up to the end of the year, and we for some reason we just decided to take the winter off. And she has always said, you know, Dave, I would keep coming onto the program. We don't have to take the break. And so this time around, I don't know why. I know why. It's because we didn't want to. We couldn't bear to be without her. For 3 months. And we said, well, let's keep going, because we figured that there would be questions. And people always, there are folks who are, if you're into gardening, you're always thinking about
sleep.
It. You never sleep. The gardeners never sleep. So, and we already have calls. So she said, yeah, sure, she would be here. And so this is the first time we've ever done this in the month of December. So I'm very glad to have you here.
Great.
And we will take as many questions as we can. Folks want to call in. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. So your questions are welcome. Also, at some point here, I'm sure that we'll have a chance to talk a little bit about some gardening-related events that are happening around our area. Sandy came prepared with some information on that. So, and that's how it is that gardeners, they get themselves through the winter.
Yes.
They spend a lot of time looking at catalogs and gardening books and going to seminars and thinking about what they're going to do next
year.
All right.
We plan and plan and then plan some more.
All right. Well, we have the lines full. We had someone even before we started the show, so we'll get right to them. That's our caller on line one in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a ginger plant that I was given as a gift, and I've had it now for about 7 months. It's not, you know, it's not growing hugely or anything, and I'm kind of worried about it on that. It's right now it's in a sunny, closed-in porch, but it's getting rather cold. So I'm planning on bringing it inside, but I'm going to repot it when I do that. And I just kind of wanted to know, for this climate, should I put it in the sunniest spot that I can, a warm spot, or does it matter? And what sort of soil should I use when I repot it?
Mm-hmm. I think tropicals have gotten to be so popular, but then, you know, like you find out really quick, they're not going to make it through the winter time. And so I'm surprised it made it through last night, to be honest with you, because it got awfully cold last night. But generally, as far as what to do, is they're highlight plants, which you've probably found out already. And they're going to not grow quite as much simply because our the amount of daylight that we have is not as great right now. And so they're not going to grow as well. But you should be able to hold them over. So I'd find the sunniest spot in your home and the warmest spot for the most part. And as far as soil, I just pick something that's some well-drained soil. I personally like the soilless mixes because they hang on to water, but yet they drain nicely. So you get kind of that nice combination of the two. So I'd be thinking about that. I think probably also on the gingers, if you had to, you probably could just let them go dormant and put them in a cool spot. That's the other thing that you could do with that if you just found that you just didn't have a very nice sunny spot. But either way.
I actually was considering bringing it into my workplace where I can put it in a sunny spot, and it will also get fluorescent light through the day and actually maybe at night as well if I can put it in a place. Would that be helpful at all?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Okay, so fluorescence would work for...
Right. And actually, that's a good thing to do if people are having trouble in the wintertime is actually to do some supplemental lighting with fluorescent lights. And the thing with the fluorescent lights, the closer the better. So the ones that are way up on the ceiling, the plants are going to get some advantage to that. But it's better if you can actually get a fluorescent light closer. We have much better fixtures now with fluorescent lights. So sometimes you can do that and not have it look too bad, too. So, but anytime you can add light this time of year is great.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. Does it really matter if you, there are some lights that the spectrum, that the kind of light that they put out is supposed to be specifically for that. Does it make much difference what kind of light you use?
Well, it's one of those things. What I usually say, if somebody's really a competitive gardener, you know, really, and they really want the best, then I think the grow lights are worth it because normally they're more expensive. So you have to kind of decide, is that really where the route I want to go, or do I just want the plants to look nice? If you just really want the plants to look nice, just a cool white bulb is just fine. Cool, and usually we say if you can have a cool white and a warm white together, that's actually a very good combination and gives you pretty good spectrum. It's not going to be quite as good as a grow light, but they're a lot cheaper.
Okay.
And yeah, the problem with fluorescent lights is that, you know, they don't just go out like an incandescent. In other words, they're on or they're off. Fluorescent lights lose the amount of light that they're putting out over a period of time. And so they're like with grow lights, you'd be more likely to hang on to them for a long period of time. But really, you should look at the label and it'll tell you how many hours they're good for. And then even though it hasn't actually blown out, then it needs to be replaced if you're really using it for plant growth.
Okay. To next caller, line number two, and someone listening here in Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good that you're here in December because I've got a question that deals with the philosophy of winter mulching.
Mm-hmm.
I usually wait till December.
Mm-hmm.
I usually wait until this first really hard frost like we've had when the ground sets. At which point, I go out with some newspaper usually, put the newspaper around the base of the plants, put soil on top of that, a little straw mounded up mostly around the base of the plant to protect the stem. But my feeling has always been that winter mulching serves to keep an even environment till spring so it doesn't thaw, freeze, so that the sun doesn't get at the stem of the plant and also thaw and freeze an outer layer of the stem. Is it the case that most people are advised to start their mulching sometime earlier just for convenience? It's warmer, it's easier to work, but that in effect, once the ground is frozen, that's what you want. You're working to keep that frozen state and have an evenness throughout the winter.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I do recommend that people wait, like if they're covering roses, to wait till December, because you really want the plant to go dormant. I guess that's the big thing. And you're absolutely right. It really is just trying to moderate those soil temperatures so you don't get the freeze and thaw, and so the plant and I what I have found is so they don't wake up too early, because sometimes if we get some really warm days, sometimes the plants get a little confused and they'll actually pop out a little bit earlier in the spring than they should, and then they get hit by frost. So it's also to sort of keep the soil cold so they don't wake up too early. So
it certainly sounds like the gardeners as well. There are plenty of people in the plant centers who will tell you, first warm weather, people come and insist on buying something
right,
to put in
right.
the ground,
well,
and
that's,
then freezes.
That's gardeners for you, for sure. But yeah, you're absolutely right. So this is a great time to be thinking about if people have roses or butterfly bushes, maybe that they want to protect, or anything they're a little bit concerned about. It's not going to make it through the winter. But as far as I've never heard of quite using the paper with the soil with the straw. Usually I just go with shredded leaves, or just a well-drained mulch is usually good. But I imagine that method would work very well too. I'd be a little bit concerned that it might keep it too wet. We have an awful lot of plants that don't make it through the wintertime, I think more because they're too wet rather than because they're too cold.
Once the soil has frozen, however, is that a wet condition? Is there any drying out of the soil over the winter?
Well, once you put all that on there, no.
Okay.
Certainly.
So you want to put on a mulch that would allow some drying?
Yeah, I guess I would just be concerned. There'd be some plants, I think specifically I would think of like chrysanthemums. They really like a well-drained soil in the wintertime. Lavender is another one that really has to have well-drained soil over the wintertime. And so that's the only time I'd be a little bit confused maybe about the method that, that you're using. But certainly mulching is a good idea all the way around. I like shredded leaves.
To hear you in December. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Our guest this morning in this Power to Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And from now on, she's going to be here every month, always on the, what is it, the second Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Yeah.
Although
second.
I think in January, it's actually the third Tuesday.
All right. Well, occasionally you may have to fritz around with the schedule. But the idea is that it's the regular time and the regular day that she's here to answer plant questions, things about things that grow outside. Also, though, if you have indoor plants, that would be fine, whatever's on your mind. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. To Piatt County. For the next caller, line four.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
Two seasons ago, I got a pretty sizable Coosa dogwood. And I thought and assumed that all dogwoods go in the shade. And I'm just wondering, because this past spring, the first year it was planted, it was later. So I just thought that's why it didn't bloom. And then this spring, it didn't bloom at all. And I'm wondering, it is in a shady, filtered light. And the Coosa that I saw over at the Mahomet Botanic Gardens is in full sun. Have I made a terrible mistake?
Does it get any sun at all, or is it just filtered the whole time?
Just filtered sun.
You know, really, most of the dogwoods will still go ahead and flower, even if they're getting some shade. I think the thing I do wonder about is it should be setting its buds. You should be starting to notice the buds right now. They set their buds the year before.
Oh.
And so if you look at the very end on those, they kind of look like, I don't know, kind of look like the old ornaments that you stick on top of trees years ago. You know, it's kind of pointed. And
yeah.
Anyway, so I would look at the ends of the branches to see if it's actually setting bud, because it was still a young plant. And young plants generally just don't flower as well as we'd like. So I'm just wondering if it's just not sort of getting its feet established. And
okay.
So I'd go out there, look now. I don't think you necessarily have made an absolute mistake at this point. So we won't give up on that just
That's
yet.
Pretty anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're very nice trees all the way around.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thank
Bye.
You. To Urbana line number one for our next caller. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, let me turn this radio off. About the grow lights. What we Gesneriad growers have discovered is they actually don't help at all as far
oh,
as
really?
Growth,
yeah.
But they do make the plants look better. So if you had something you wanted to display, there'd be an advantage. But you can take a plant out from underneath one and put it on the regular light bench, and it'll look just like the others. And if you take something from the light bench and you put it on under the grow lamp, it looks better. But there's actually no difference. In
oh, it looks better as long as they're underneath the grow light? Is that what you mean?
That's right.
Oh, got ya. Okay. There might be a greener color or something to it when you say it looks better?
The color balance is such that it displays better.
Oh.
But it doesn't actually help with the growth.
Yeah, you haven't found that to be true. Well,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
But thanks for that. I didn't realize that. That's great. Thanks.
Yeah. What the lighting engineers claim is most of the light loss with the fluorescence is in about the last 6 months, I think.
Really?
Yeah. So it isn't as serious as some people I know. I've had friends who insisted they should discard all the bulbs after a year.
Well, I think most of the bulbs, don't they give you an hour rating on them?
I think they do.
And so I would imagine I'd probably stick with what the manufacturer, just guessing, obviously, and how often you're using it. That's probably the big thing. So.
Well, I'm enjoying the program.
Hey, thanks for sharing.
Very good. Thank you for the call. Well, we'll go on. The next caller here is in Champaign, line number three. Hello.
This is me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've worked very, very hard trying to get a bur oak to actually grow from a seed. I now have one that's 2 years old, and I love it. And I have a tomato cage around it. Yesterday I found that the top of it has just been cut off. Now, I don't know whether this is a squirrel, a rabbit, or a very zealous neighbor.
No, I'd almost bet you it's a rabbit.
What?
I'm almost sure it's a rabbit.
Now, would they do it at ground level? Or this was 15 inches up.
Well, is it such that they could actually stand on the... Mm-hmm. I've seen them actually stand on wire or on fences and then stretch in order to get to something. And they leave this perfect 45-degree angle, and you'd swear that somebody had these really sharp pruners and clipped it off, but it's jelly rabbits.
Okay. I wonder, because the same neighbor has used herbicide and ruined my youth.
Well, then I'm not sure what to tell you, but I have, the first time I ever saw it, I could have sworn my husband was like in big trouble for a while, because I thought he'd clipped something off and then found out it was really
okay.
A rabbit. So.
Now, I have two tomato cages around it, but I was wondering, what do you say about putting a great big empty box of a detergent box that will cover the whole thing for the winter? Is that suitable?
I think your best bet, they still need, I'd be concerned about a couple things. Just the fact that they may warm up too much inside the box when we get really warm, sunny days, and that's not what you want them to do. You want them to stay dormant. And I think your best bet is can you just get some wire mesh or something and actually make this a little bit taller? Yeah, just make the cage taller so they don't can't clip off the top. And I really wouldn't worry too much. The oak will do just fine. It'll sprout up again. I mean, it'll send up sprouts from the side.
It's tall, but just one stick.
Yeah, but it'll sprout out, and you'll find that it'll do fine from there. It's
okay.
Just has a little different shape now, thanks to the rabbit. But I would get some wire mesh and just make sure it's a fine mesh.
Okay.
And that'll really help you a lot. I think you can even get it in 4-foot heights these days.
All righty. Well, thank you so much.
Uh-huh. Right. Good luck.
Well, again, we have plenty of time here and lines open. If you have a question for Sandy, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. If you have questions about things that grow in the home, landscape, trees, shrubs, flowers, vegetables, houseplants, give us a call. Over at our house, we have a pretty good-sized rosemary plant that mm-hmm. has been living outside all summer, and mm-hmm. we would like to see if we can get it to go at least a little bit longer. And I know mm-hmm. that can be really difficult, particularly because the inside air in the wintertime is really mm-hmm. dry. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. Any guidance on what we might
do? Yeah, you've really hit upon it. I leave mine outside as long as I possibly can. Like, mine is still outside right now.
Really?
Although it sounds like, you know, I probably should have brought it in last night with 11 degrees. That's getting down there pretty low, but it still seemed like it was okay. So pretty soon I'll be bringing it in. So I try to leave it out as long as I possibly can so it knows it's time to go dormant. And then you're absolutely right. Our inside environment is just so dry that it's just not really good for the rosemary. So the success I've had is find the coldest place in your house, just absolutely the coldest place in your house, but hopefully still has lights or where you can provide some light or something along those lines. And they're much happier if you can get them in those cold spots or cool spots. And mm-hmm. then it won't make quite so much a difference to the fact that there's not quite so much humidity in the air. Also, you can just don't let them dry out too much. I think sometimes that's the concern, is that sometimes people just don't water them enough. That I've found, I still have to water mine probably at least every 10 days or so, even though it's indoors and maybe it's not growing a whole lot, but it's in the sun. And it still needs some light. So don't let them dry out too much. That's probably because they're very unforgiving, I found out. I found out the hard way. They're very unforgiving. If you don't let, you know, if you let them dry out too much, that's kind of it.
Well, I've had experiences in the past where I had a really healthy plant and it seemed to be going along just fine. And then overnight,
yeah,
it would
die.
It
seemed like it, yeah.
And I wasn't really sure, right. You know, what exactly I did or didn't do.
Right. But
okay.
Cool. And then if you can add some humidity in different ways, that's great. If you had an area where there's a humidifier or even just a pebble tray, just a tray with water in it, with pebbles, anything along those lines is going to help the plant with a little bit more humidity. Yeah. But you're right. They're a little bit touchy. So don't feel bad if it doesn't quite make
okay.
it. Okay. See, horticulture industry loves people like you, and you just kill them off every year, but yet you still
then
want
one. You have
to
go buy a new one. Exactly. Exactly. We have some other callers here. Savoy next, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I bought an orchid after I got back from Costa Rica. Didn't buy it in Costa Rica, bought it in the United States, but it has kept its flowers on and everything since the end of September. And now it's beginning to lose the flowers, and I'm not quite sure what to do to get it, to let it go dormant, and then hopefully it'll bloom again.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what kind of orchid it is?
It's a Dendrobia.
Oh, okay. I'm not an orchid expert. I will tell you that for sure. And on those particular ones, I do know those are probably one of the easier ones to get back into flower. So that's the good news. Yeah, so that's a good thing. And also, I'm pretty sure on that one, and maybe there's an orca grower out there that could fill us in on some of this, but as far as I know, you know, they have that long scape where all the flowers are coming off of it.
Yeah.
Don't cut the whole thing off.
Oh, okay.
Just cut it down to where the last flower is.
Ah,
because the way I understand it, those will actually send up another shoot from there.
Ah, okay.
So at least try that. But I'm pretty sure the dendrobiums are the ones that will do that, so don't take the whole thing off. So you may actually get a little bit more flowering from there. And I think as far as those goes, they do need some humidity. And that's going to be the big thing with the orchids, although dendrobiums are a little bit more forgiving along those lines. So make sure you have plenty of humidity. And as
I
was mentioning,
it's out in my kitchen. So, and I miss
so that helps
every day. So
yeah. And then
I've been just really thrilled the fact that it's lasted almost 3 months.
Well, and you must be doing something right or it wouldn't still be happy, but orchids are wonderful, and I don't think people realize how long the flowers last on an orchid.
Yeah.
They just last forever.
I was amazed.
Yeah, yeah, they're really a great bargain if you get into them.
Yeah, it is neat. So, well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
All right, thank you. To line number 3, this is someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a small problem. I don't know if this is as pertinent, but we were thinking of putting in a fence, but I prefer a hedge, but we have very minimal sun back there. And can you recommend something that would be a fast-growing evergreen that would tolerate minimal sun?
Wow. We don't have a whole lot of evergreens, as you probably know, that are going to... So does it get any sun at all, or it's
Yeah, it does. It gets morning sun, but it's, like I said, it's filtered, and almost everything I pick up, everywhere I go and everyone I talk to says anything that's evergreen needs a lot of sun.
Yeah, yeah. The only ones that tolerate some shade are actually yews will tolerate some shade, you know, that dark green thing that everybody has. But they will tolerate some shade. And I think the thing you will find is when you start growing these things in shade, they tend to open up. They tend to be not quite as thick. And that's just part of the fact that they're just not getting as much light. Also, Canadian hemlocks will take some shade. And they actually are a shrub that you can, although it's a tree, you can actually shear those to make them more like a hedge.
Oh, okay.
So that would be another one. Again, they're another one of those that tends to kind of open up. But if you do some shearing, I don't know if you want to get into that or not, you could actually make it a little denser and have it more like a hedge. So those would be a couple suggestions. Otherwise, I think you're going to find that they're just going to sort of fade away, whatever you plant out there. They're just not going to do as well.
And anything on a non-evergreen...
You certainly open up your avenues a lot when you get away from those. The typical ones, I guess, if you're really wanting, I love viburnums, and viburnums take shade. They do very well in shade. Super plants. You get the flowers, the fruit, the whole thing. So I've never met a viburnum I didn't like. So there's any number. I don't know if you're familiar with those shrubs, but they have lovely flowers on them, and some of them are quite fragrant. There's a Korean spice viburnum. It's very fragrant. Birkwood viburnum's another one that's very nice, but a bunch of them out there, and they easily can make a very nice hedge. Some of them get very tall, so depending on what the height you want on those. But
actually, we do have a couple of those, and they've reached 15 feet. It's perfect, but it'd be nice to maybe intersperse them with the Korean and Birkwood.
Yeah, there's some other shorter ones if you don't want anything that gets quite that 15 feet, so you might think about those. If you're wanting to do it really cheap, then something like a red twig dogwood is, you know, you can buy those fairly cheaply, and they still make a nice hedge. So that would be another one.
All right, very good. We're already close to the midpoint of this hour of Focus 580. I just should introduce again our guest, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and is here monthly on a Tuesday. And we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. If you have questions, give us a call. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Arcola. Line 4, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I want to ask about a Christmas cactus. I have a huge, it's about 20 years old. It's been repotted maybe in the last six years. It's in a filtered south window, and it's been dropping its leaves and buds, and, well, of course, the bloom drop after they it's blooming. And I wonder if I water occasionally, I wonder if I'm doing too much watering, not enough watering.
Mm-hmm. Do you let it dry out in between watering, or
yes,
are you?
I do, and I fertilized it earlier this fall before it started budding. And I've never had it to drop leaves like this before. Mm-hmm. It's one of the old-fashioned Christmas cactuses.
The thing I've seen with those, I'd be concerned about a couple things, is maybe you're not watering it enough. And often you'll see that the flowers don't last as long. They sort of dry up and fall off. Sometimes that's a first indication that they're just being a little bit too dry. Because when they're in, they can tolerate dryness, but when they're in flower, they generally like to be fairly consistently moist.
Well, I've found out they take more water than a lot of people think.
Yeah. People hear the name cactus and they think they never have to water it, but that's you're absolutely right. You really need to water it more than what the name implies.
Oh, I don't know how big around it is. How often should they be repotted?
You know, they can stand to be pot bound and still be fine. So it's pretty much up to you. But they should have at least a couple inches between where the plant is and where the edge of the pot is.
You mean the top of the pot?
Yeah, right. So if they've grown out to the point where they're actually touching the edge of the pot, they've grown out that much, then you definitely need to think about transplanting it. And I'd probably wait till it's after flowering and then transplant it. They do get some root rot problems. That's the other thing I do see on those that can actually make the leaves also fall off.
That's what I was afraid of. Maybe I might be getting some root rot.
What you need to do is just follow those stems back wherever the leaves are falling off. Just follow those stems back and feel it. And if they're rotten, they'll just pop off.
Well, it seems like it's just the end of the leaves that turn yellow.
Right.
And they drop off. And then, as I said, some of the buds have been dropping off.
Right. I'd really wonder about being either too hot or too dry.
In that case. Okay. I enjoy your program.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Well, let's see. We'll go on to, we have a caller here on our line number one in Mattoon. Hello.
Good morning. I have three Norfolk pines, houseplants in pots, and they're really at what I consider just a wonderful size. And they started out as very little things and have grown to be, you know, pretty nice size things. And they're really about as big as I'd like them to get. And I'm wondering if there's any way that I can kind of slow down the growth or keep them from getting any bigger. I don't want them to outgrow the house without making them look bad or harming the plant.
Right, right. And you've hit upon the one problem with those particular plants because they have that central leader. And if that gets damaged or whatever, then it sort of sends off this really funny thing that heads off one way or the other and they sort of lose their aesthetic appeal. So they're a little bit harder to trim back like we might think with a lot of other plants. Now, you could actually do that, but then you'd actually, when it sends up its new little shoot, you have to take something and so it props it up. Straight up. And so if you did want to prune them, you could do that. The other thing is I would start putting them in. Are they in a fairly high light area?
They get a pretty decent amount of light. Nothing direct, fairly indirect light.
Because you don't want to stress them to the point where they don't do well, but you could actually either, you know, maybe lower the temperature more, don't give them quite as much light. I definitely, you know, not fertilize them, but maybe once a year, a couple of times a year. If you're really trying to slow them down, I'd be thinking about the fertility as well.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you. On to Urbana. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi. I've always admired magnolia trees, and I think I'm the only person in my neighborhood that doesn't have one.
Do you feel left out, do you?
Yeah, I certainly do. I mean, it's nice driving home in the spring and seeing everybody else's tree, but I kind of want one myself. So I'm calling to ask where I can find one and when's the best time to try to plant one in my yard. I have a huge it's kind of southwest yard. It's very big, so I know I have enough space. I just don't know if I have the right exposure.
Well, it sounds like you do, because space is an issue with magnolias, because they tend to, at least the saucer magnolias and some of the other ones, they're very widespreading. So there are some little smaller ones called the star magnolia.
Okay.
And it's a little bit different flower. The petals are more strap-like. They're a little thinner. But it tends to stay a little bit smaller, and you actually can trim it and keep it smaller if you don't want something quite as big as the other magnolias. the other thing I'd really look for with those is, you know, sometimes, and I don't know if you've seen this around your neighborhood, but sometimes we get those late frosts, and about the times the magnolias are looking magnificent, then we get this frost, and then it looks like, you know, just this brown stuff hanging on the plants. So I would make sure that when you buy one, make sure it's one of the later flowering ones.
Okay.
I do a little homework, and right off the top of my head, I can't think. I think some of the lily-flowered ones, I think they're called lily-flowered, are some of the later ones. So look for the later blooming ones, and then you won't have quite as much trouble with losing those flowers early in the season.
Okay. And where's the best place to get one? At one of the garden shops, or do I have to order it? Or
yeah, I'd certainly go local, and these should be ones, unless you're really looking for a weird one. You should be able to find them at local garden centers.
Okay.
In the springtime. Normally that would be when you'd find them.
Okay, in the spring. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
All right, thanks. On to Monticello, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm hoping that I can get a little help with my peace lily. I've had it for about a year now, and when I first got it, it just bloomed and bloomed, and now I can't get it to produce any blossoms. And I was wondering what I can do to stimulate it to bloom.
What kind of light is it getting?
Oh, well, it was on the in the sunroom most of the time this last summer, and even just up until just recently, but that didn't help. I did transplant it because originally it was from a florist, and it had a, was in a smaller container, but I have put it in, probably 12-inch pottery-type urn.
And it's growing, it's just not flowering.
Oh, yeah, it just puts leaves out like crazy.
I don't know if on those, I don't think there's anything like the amount of light they get during the day. I don't think they have any problems along those lines. So I think I'd wonder about maybe stressing it a little bit more. Do you fertilize it at all, or do you?
No, well, I have, but you know, I'm trying to be careful not to do too much.
Right. I think I'd be cutting back on the fertilizer for thing.
I haven't, because I wanted to talk to you or somebody about it. And to I did put a little bit of Epsom salts, but maybe a teaspoon of Epsom salts on it, because I read somewhere that that was good for plants.
Yeah, it's got, it's magnesium sulfate, so it's got the magnesium in it, which is a nutrient that plants need. So that's fine. But I really would wonder about, I would not fertilize them, especially this time of year. I wouldn't fertilize them simply because unless they're getting supplemental light, they can't use it quite as well.
Do they need to be in a bigger pot, you think?
I've certainly seen, again, it's one of those things where if it, I've seen them actually blooming even when they're touching the outside of the pot. But I think as long as they're not wilting too much, are you able to?
It's not wilting. It looks good.
You know, it's one of those things, if they wilt all the time and you can't keep them wet, then you know it's in a pot that's too small.
Oh, okay.
So if you're not having a problem with that, and it still feels like, it still seems like it's growing, and there's a little space between the plant and the pot, then I don't think I'd worry too much about whether it needs to be transplanted till maybe later on. So I'd wonder about the fertility on that. As far as that goes, I'm not sure what else would make those not bloom. They do cycle. They're like kind of like African violets. They sort of cycle, and so they'll bloom, and then they kind of quit for a while, and then they bloom again. So
do they have? Is there a time on their cycle?
I don't think there is. So I'm kind of hesitating a little bit to tell you that for sure, but I don't think there is, as far as, you know, the daylight or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, my sister told me to sing to it.
Sing to it? Oh, well, that's always a good idea. Maybe that's what's wrong with my plants. Maybe it's the way I sing. Actually, it's the way I sing.
Well, thank you.
Maybe that's it. No, yeah, good luck. Yeah, and I'd be glad to do some more research on that if you really want to research this a little bit more. But you can give me a call at the U of I Extension office here in Champaign County.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. So if you couldn't sing to them and you were going to play music, what kind of music would be best?
You know, there's always, it's like the favorite science fair project of every grade school kid, isn't it? Is to do rap music and, you know, different types of music.
Mozart
to see if it makes any difference. Supposedly, from what I've seen, obviously it's not researched. True research. But it seems to be the things like Mozart and the, you know, the little softer music maybe than what we might traditionally think of with rap and some of those others.
I see. Okay, so if people out there want to do some experiments, let us know.
That's it.
We have all winter to do this. What else
but
are we
going to
do? But,
you know, they actually did a study one time where people were talking to the plants and then sort of looking at growth rates. And they really found there was a little bit of difference, but mainly because, you know, when you talk, you're giving off carbon dioxide. You know, and you're just breathing on
the
plants. So basically, you're just breathing on them. And so there might actually be a little bit of benefit from that. But it's, and you know. Want to talk nice to them.
She's a wealth of information,
wealth
ladies and gentlemen.
Of trivial, useless information.
Let's go on. We have other callers. Next is Champagne Line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about raspberries.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very small little raspberry plant, brand new, and the rabbits ate my other tiny ones. It's about an inch high. So I took it back out of the ground and put it in a pot up high out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm worried that it's not going to last, and I don't know if I should bring it in the house or in my garage.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about just covering it outside, like with wire mesh or something, so it doesn't get eaten?
Well, yeah, that'd be a very good idea. Do they survive well? I mean, when they're brand-new plants out in the just in the ground?
You're so concerned. I can tell. This is great.
I've been trying to grow raspberries.
It's like your baby. I know. I love it when gardeners talk about it because we're all like that. We have our baby. You know, we baby our plants along. We have our babies. We worry about them so much. But, the raspberries are really pretty tough plants, and they sucker up pretty well. Even if their tops get nipped off, they do a pretty good job of suckering up. The one thing about bringing it in is I worry about a couple things. Is they really do need a dormant period, a cold dormant period. And that's
okay.
True of a lot of our fruit plants, is that they actually need winter. We may think it's kind of a useless time, but the plants really need winter in order to go through their dormancy and then break their dormancy and flower. So that's real important. And I also wonder if you bring it in, even if it's in a cold spot, then we get these fluctuations in temperature and it gets cold and it's hot and cold and hot. And then the poor plant doesn't know what it's supposed to be doing.
Okay.
Your best bet is to get it outside.
Is it better for it to be in the ground than in a pot?
You bet.
Okay.
It really is, because when they're in a pot like that, that pot, because it's a small mass there, it's going to freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw, and that's not good. It's really not good.
All right. Well, I will stick it back in the ground and get a cage for it.
You could mulch it, put a little mulch around it. I think that's fine. Get a nice wire mesh or something to get it going that way. And I think you'll find that it'll do just fine from there.
Okay.
So talk to it nice. We've already learned that this morning.
Yeah, I'll sing to it. Like,
there you go. There you go.
I have another question. Is there time for another?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm making some raised beds also around two trees. And after I had made the already put the wood up, I started hearing about how I could kill the trees by mounding up dirt.
Mm-hmm.
They're about 6 inches high, so they're just barely raised beds, I've only put dirt in half of one of the raised beds. They're 8 feet by 8 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering what you thought about that.
Yeah, what kind of trees are they?
I was trying to figure that out. I think one of them is some kind of oak tree. It's got a kind of a starry leaf, and it dropped its leaves, one of the last trees to lose its leaves this fall. And the other one's kind of got rough bark, and it looks a little bit papery up towards the top. It comes off in kind of sheets.
Yeah, I'm not sure. The reason I ask it depends on the species. I guess, number one, we would normally tell you not to do that because you really do change the trunk. Is very different from the roots. I know that sounds like a basic thing, but it truly is. And how they react to the environment is very different. And once you start putting soil next to bark tissue, it's not its normal. It's not the normal way for it to be, unless it happens to be one of those floodplain species, and that's what I was trying to get at. So things like sycamores and maples and things that normally would grow, you know, in the bottomlands, they actually do okay if soil comes around them, because that would be in their normal habitat. But a lot of other trees that would be upland, things like oaks, some of these other ones, they're not used to that. And what you can end up with is some rot around where the soil is actually right around the trunk. You might actually end up with some rot. So we do are concerned about that. So I would definitely keep the soil away from the trunk.
Okay. So if I kind of built up a little thing around the trunk and held the dirt away from it, would that take
right, care of the problem? Right. Since you already have the beds in, I would suggest that. I would probably go that route. But generally, it isn't something that we would recommend, because you really do, when you start adding soil to the top above roots, you sort of change the whole dynamic of the amount of air the roots are getting, the amount of water the roots are getting. And so generally, that's why we don't recommend that kind of thing.
Okay. All right. So, well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. Next caller here is in Pontiac, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a backyard question that my wife and I have been struggling with for about 3 years in our house. We have a small backyard, maybe 22 feet deep by about 34 feet wide. And when we bought the house, you know, mostly dirt and a little bit of grass and lots of wild strawberries. Well, we had some grass growing for a while, and then inadvertently last spring, a spraying company got the wrong address, and they came into our backyard and just, you know, used a bunch of herbicides and just burned everything except what little grass remained.
Oh, gosh.
We, in the spring, got a dog, and so the dog has done basically the rest of the work for us of destroying the backyard grass. What we're wondering about is, we had a lot of trees trimmed this fall. It, probably about 60 to 70% of it will get sunlight mm-hmm. now. And we mm-hmm. have a part along the north side of the house, very tall house, that gets barely any sun. And then we have a corner area that doesn't get much at all. We're wondering, there's a possibility in the summer we might end up, you know, selling the house, going to a bigger house. Mm-hmm. We didn't know if we should look at doing something, how what we could do to either prep it in the winter and then start grass seed in the spring with some hay. You know, mm-hmm. we have spotty areas with grass. We don't know if we should just, you know, completely turn it all and then do new grass and dirt, and we can just take the dog into the front yard for a while. Mm-hmm. Or one of my neighbors recently just redid his backyard, a small backyard like ours, tore up the ground, and got out this rolled-out turf grass. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so we're kind of wondering, you know, if we're looking at possibly selling it, do we do the turf grass in the spring to make it look nicer sooner? Or if we're going with planting grass, what would you recommend, sort of what we could do now and into the early spring to get it ready for planting?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I about the only thing you can do now is if you have areas maybe where it's lower or there's some drainage issues, I'd be taking care of those now, because you could add some soil or whatever you need to do along those lines. Is it halfway decent soil, or is it clay, or
you know? Kind of a mixture. When there was a lot of construction done on the house, and so the first summer I spent pulling up nails and pieces of coal and, you know, pieces of roofing tile.
You've had such fun with this yard.
You know, and well, I finally discovered, my vet recommended these little dog treats. We have a female dog that prevents it changes the biology inside of her fluids, and it doesn't burn the grass as much. So we've defeated that one, but I would say the soil is not in the greatest of shape.
Yeah, yeah. Because the other thing you could do this time of year, if you wanted to, is to add compost or something along those lines. So about that's about the only thing you could do in the winter time here, is maybe to add compost or you know, fill in those areas with some soil if you want to go that route. The sod thing, you know, that rollout turf stuff, if you're planning on selling it right away, obviously it really is going to make it look good pretty much right away. So that's a quick thing. And if I was selling a home and I wanted to spend the money because it's going to be a lot more expensive than seeding, you know, I might think about that, because it is going to make it look nicer and maybe make your home more saleable. So I guess I'd think about that. Otherwise, you're going to have to wait till the springtime to do your seeding. Normally, we do that in April. And that would be a matter of, you still you'd want to dig it up, in the sense that maybe rototill it or something, because you want to prepare the bed and then use some in your different areas, depending on how much sun it's getting. But you could use usually a Kentucky bluegrass perennial ryegrass mix is what most people go with. But it's going to take longer, obviously, and you're definitely going to have to leave the dog off of it.
Yeah. Should we look at waiting till April then to till it? Because I'm of the opinion, whether we seed or sod, just, you know, start anew so we can, you know, kind of start, because we have, I'd say, four types of different grass back there. Yeah. And the wild strawberries have even started to come back despite being blasted by the herbicides last spring.
Right,
some of
right,
them are
right.
Slowly coming back. But wait till April then is what you're saying, before we do any tilling.
Right. And I would think about, if you have some really horrible weeds, some people have different feelings about strawberries, but I'd be thinking about weed control before I do any tilling. So if you had anything like bindweed or creeping Charlie or any of those, then again, I'd think about next spring killing those off. And then doing my, once those are dead, I do my tilling, add compost at that time, and then do your seeding.
Okay, great. Speaking of killing off, one other quick follow-up. We had a lot of trees trimmed in this last fall, and one of the trees was a tree of paradise.
Uh-huh.
The way it is growing, it's underneath part of our fence, and so we kind of held off. But it's coming up about 3 feet off the ground. The person who did the tree trimming said it's kind of like a weed. It will come back. Is there any like surefire way, short of like drilling down into the core? And I don't want to poison it, but other than digging it up, is there any kind of way you can actually prevent that from coming back?
So you've already cut it off, or they cut it off?
Yeah, they cut it off, and it's maybe 3 feet out of the ground now. But I'm already seeing runners coming out of the side.
So they left a stump that's 3 feet tall?
Yeah, because we ended up, because it was right up on the fence, ended up having to chop into it. So we're kind of debating on what to do about it.
Right. Because if it was at ground level, it'd be much easier, because then you could use just like black plastic or something like that and put over it and then hopefully sort of starve it out at that point. Otherwise, obviously it's going to resprout. And at that point, about your best bet would be something along the line of one of the brush killers. So depending on whether you want to use an herbicide or not, that's really kind of up to you, but that would be one thing that would keep that thing from resprouting.
But if we can get it low enough, maybe we have a friend who's really artsy with a chainsaw. If we can get it low enough to the ground cut, then basically just cover it in a thick black plastic and kind of choke it from sunlight.
Right. And just basically try to starve it out by doing that.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck.
We have maybe about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Sandy Mason is with us. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. It's our monthly lawn and garden care program, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. To another caller here, Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I've moved into a house that has a lawn. And the lawn had been serviced by a lawn service, and they're proposing to do a bunch of things. I'm wondering if this is something I need to do. I'll tell you what they're called here: spring maximizer, early summer booster plus, fall root builder, winter strengthener, fall core cultivation, fall root feeding, and it adds up to quite a bit of money. Is this something that you need to do, or?
I guess it really, ultimately, it's obviously it's up to you, but I think the biggest thing you have to decide is, what do I really want my lawn to look like? And we all have, the full spectrum of, some of us just want it to be green and we don't really care if there's a few weeds in there. We want it to be green most of the time, and beyond that, we don't really worry about it too much. Some people truly, do not want any weeds and really are very concerned about, insects and those kinds of things. And so it's going to make a difference. And so you have to decide yourself, where do I fall on that spectrum? So do you have a feel for that already, or do you really feel
The lawn itself looks okay. It looks nice enough, but it doesn't look like a golf course with all of this being done. So I'm trying to, I'd sort of like it to be neat, I guess. Orderly.
Right. And so it is one of those things that sometimes you can, depending on how you want it to look, you could either do it yourself. You certainly can provide your own fertilization and using herbicides and those kinds of things if you choose to go that route. There's certainly plenty of programs out there that sort of help you sort of do it yourself. If you don't want to have to worry about, okay, when do I do this, when do I do that, then I think that's certainly where the lawn care companies come in. We do have, at the U of I Extension, we do have some wonderful fact sheets that say, okay, April, this is the time you need to be thinking about seeding your lawn, maybe doing some herbicide treatment, those kinds of things. So the nice thing is we do have lots of information that will tell you that kind of thing if you choose to go that route.
How do I get this information?
It's what county are you in?
I'm in Champaign.
Okay, would be my office. It's U of I Extension. We're 801 North Country Fair Drive, and our number is 333-7672.
Okay.
And you can just give us a call. We'd be glad to mail that to you.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for
Sure.
Okay, we seem to get one more. The caller's in Berwyn, line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have an endless summer hydrangea my son gave to me this year, and it was growing on the side in a semi-shaded, and it got eaten by something that makes holes in the leaves. My husband got so concerned about it dying because it was getting worse. We dug it up, put it in a big pot, and now I'm in a kind of a quandary. Should I try to let it hibernate or whatever in the winter, or should I keep it growing inside the house?
Mm-hmm.
I have a back porch that will freeze.
Mm-hmm. Really, your best bet is to let it do what it naturally would do, as in it would go ahead and go dormant this time of year.
Yeah.
So I think your best bet would be get it back in the ground rather than trying to keep it indoors.
I have to amend that soil. I don't think it's too great. I dug up a lilac, not enough sun,
mm-hmm.
and it has to go back in the same spot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I kind of thought that too, but I guess the bugs wouldn't be around now.
Right, right, right. And actually what I have done this late in the season is sometimes I've just, if I have something I really feel like needs to get into the ground, either I always have plenty of mulch sitting around in piles, so I actually just sink the pot and everything in the mulch, and that helps to protect it. Or I just put something in my vegetable garden just for the winter. I'm just sort of, they call it healing in. So what I'm saying is, you know, basically you're just putting this temporarily, knowing that in the springtime you're going to dig it back up again and then put it where you really want it.
Okay.
And that's also a good way to sort of get these deciduous things through the winter time and go ahead and have them go dormant.
Yeah, I don't do too well in the house.
It's just too hard indoors. You know, I think if we had these perfect environments, it'd be a little easier. You know, it's 35 degrees the whole time, those kind of things. But none of us really have those areas. So I think that's why it's better to get it outside.
Would I heal it in, take it out of the pot and heal it in like I do with roses?
That's what I would do, is just go ahead and put it in the ground without the pot.
Thanks, sir.
All right,
good luck.
Thank you. Well, that's about what we have. Do you want to take a minute to mention anything? Well, I just said way back at the beginning that you had some information on events.
Right. There's lots of great things coming up. If people have some interest in organic production, there's going to be a great conference going on January 12th through the 13th at the Holiday Inn in Normal. It's our organic production conference. And if people want info on that, it's 217-333-1588. And great opportunity for people that are, if they're interested in organic production. Another great program that's going to be coming up is Herb Day, which is January 29th. And if you've ever had an opportunity to go to Herb Day, you know how wonderful they are. That'll be Saturday at the Holiday Inn in Urbana. Lots of great speakers there. It's always a good show all the way around. So I think people will enjoy that. That's a January 29th Herb Day at the Holiday Inn in Urbana. And they can give me a call if they want more info on that.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Great.
We'll see you next month.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us once a month, always on a Tuesday, second Tuesday of the month, to talk about lawn and garden care. Programming here on our station is made possible by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds. It's distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Programs also made possible by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone round tables, conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. Coming up on the Afternoon Magazine today, a conversation about free speech in time of war. We'll take a look at the history of our debate on civil liberties, free speech, national security. Celeste Quinn talks with Jeffrey Stone, professor of law at University of Chicago. Coming up in the next hour of this show, we'll be talking with writer Charles Coulomb about rum, the epic story of the drink that conquered the world, a new book that he's authored, so hope that you'll stay with us. We'll have news from National Public Radio first, an update on the markets.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection.